from deep inside your radio.
From London, not London, Ontario, Canada, London, England. Just to make that clear right at the start, ladies and gentlemen, because I hate that kind of confusion. It bugs me. It bugs me, man. Now, I am not a necessarily a VIP, let alone a VIFP, but I was with some of the latter Friday night, and it was our pleasure, I'm speaking for the group, to attend the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games. Perhaps you've heard of them? Now, before any of you in the audience hops on my behind and say, Harry, you've been snarky about the Olympics for about a year and a half. How dare you? Let me just say this. If I can't be a hypocrite, who can? Think about that. No, I went to report for you, of course, ladies and gentlemen. It's my duty as the whatever of this show. So you've seen and heard and blah, blah, blah. But just some observations that may have escaped you so far, because they did, you know, they were not passed on 3x5 cards to Matt or Meredith, who I hear did a bang up job. We didn't see it over in London, you know, and didn't get commercials in their coverage either. What the hell kind of country is this? Anyway, it was something that only occurred to me after seeing the show. And by the way, what a show! And doesn't, you know, I understand Rupert Murdoch tweeted negatively about it yesterday. And, you know, understandably so, because he just wishes he could get those kind of ratings with talent that works for free. But it only struck me yesterday, the slight bit of unease I had watching the tableau. Now, the physical, the animals were great. We got there early enough that we got to see the animals enter, which was, of course, long before television came on. Because television wouldn't be interested in... Olympic television is so interested in attracting female viewers, and synchronized swimming and rhythmic gymnastics, but they would never think of, like, turning the cameras on an hour and a half early just to hear their female viewership say, as female companions of mine did, oh, look, the sheep are coming in. Anyway, we were there early enough to hear the warm-up. Yes, just like at a sitcom in Hollywood. They do a warm-up, except this was not by a stand-up comic that I can think of. More like a counselor at summer camp who was instructing us on all the things we had to do to be part of the show. Because that way, see, ladies and gentlemen, we're not just spectators. We're part of history. So, you know, at every instruction. All right, when the mechanicals, who are these people who were connected with the show, that's what they were called, mechanicals. Nice, dignified term. When the mechanicals make this gesture with their hands, and then she crosses her arms at about the wrist level, that means stop. What does that mean? Stop. Really, literally. That's a charming way to start. Anyway, the thought, as I was saying, that occurred to me after I saw the spectacle, because there was something disconcerting about it, and I couldn't put my finger. A brilliant job of organization. Some brilliant ideas, some others. But then I realized, yes, Rupert, they were volunteers. They were people working for free. In other words, it was basically like a motion picture starring extras. And what made me just a little bit disquieting was that I was watching acting by extras, which is always good. It started when the cricket players came out, the cricket players who were miming cricket because they didn't have a ball. And if you think cricket is boring, try watching cricket without the ball. But they were overacting, miming cricket, and that's because, of course, of what I said earlier. I don't want to get the background people in Hollywood all mad at me, because I love you folks, as long as you don't look in the camera. The only thing that I thought was missing, of course, there were positives and negatives, and, you know, Danny Boyle got some critiques for showing, you know, a warts and all version of Britain. But one wart he missed, and that I thought would have been exquisite, would have been, you know, about 100, or let's say, well, they had enough people, 1,000 bankers, you know, just running from the center of the field to the exits with your money, to the tune of Pink Floyd, of course. But as I say, we got there early and therefore got to enjoy. Now, these were VIFPs, ladies and gentlemen. And you'd think that we'd have an easy way in. Au contraire. We had to enjoy, we had the obligation to enjoy the full length of the walk that is prepared for most visitors to the Olympics. They walk through, longitudinally, through Europe's largest mall. I lie not. Somehow it was in the plans. I think this was even in a story that I shared with you many moons ago about the Olympics, that the main entrance was designed to snake you through Europe's largest mall. It's the airport idea of design. First the shops, then maybe your plane. Lovely. I don't know if you noticed, the president of the Olympics, Jacques Rogge. Yes, these are Rogge Olympics. I guess in the last minute, maybe he planned to all along, inserted a line as he addressed the athletes about avoiding doping. And the athlete who took the pledge, the Olympic oath, because the Olympics, it's not just a movement. It's like a nation. It has a flag. It has an anthem. It has an oath. And there was no doping was inserted into the oath this year as well. Paul McCartney, you may have seen, was last on the ceremony. And I don't know if television showed it, but if I'm Paul, I'm calling my agent, because half the arena, the stadium, had emptied by the time he had finished the word hey and started enunciating the J in Jude. And that, there, if you've never seen 80,000 volunteers running for the exit, that was a spectacle. What's London like in the aftermath of this event? Television has been saying everybody is agog. Newspapers have been saying it too. And maybe that's true. But I took a little informal conversational survey of people in the stores. They still have stores in London, not just malls. And one woman, cashier, I approached and I said, I didn't say, wasn't it great? And I didn't say, what did you think? Which I guess were the two questions that most people were asked by reporters. I approached it in a slightly different way. I said, have you got Olympic fever too? And she paused and gave me an appraising look and then apprised me of, see kids, two different meanings, apprised me of what she really thought, which was, no, not really. But, you know, when people ask me, I kind of, well, I can't really say it because, you know, they're so happy. So anyway, that's the eyewitness report. I don't know, this may be illegal. I'm hoping it's illegal, but I have some tape on my phone. And maybe I could, you know, we're not on television, but maybe I could just, here it is. Oh, I'm in big trouble now. All right, enough of that. Hello, welcome to the show.
London Pride has been handed down to us. London Pride is a flower that's free. London Pride means our own dear town to us, and our pride it forever will be. Whoa, Liza, see the Costa barrows, the vegetable marrows, and the fruit piled high. Oh, Liza, little London sparrows, Covent Garden Market where the costers cry. Cockney feet mark the beat of history, every street pins a memory down. Nothing ever can quite replace the grace of London town. There's a little city flower every spring unfailing, growing in the crevices by some London railing. Though it has a Latin name, in town and countryside, we in England call it London Pride.
London Pride has been handed down to us. London Pride is a flower that's free. London Pride means our own dear town to us, and our pride it forever will be. Hey, lady, when the day is dawning, see the policeman yawning on his lonely beat. Gay lady, Mayfair in the morning, hear your footsteps echo in the empty street. Early rain and the pavement's glistening, all Park Lane in a shimmering gown. Nothing ever could break or harm the charm of London town. In our city darkened now, street and square and crescent, we can feel our living past in our shadowed present. Ghosts beside our starlit Thames, who lived and loved and died, keep throughout the ages London pride. London pride has been handed down to us. London pride is a flower that's free. London pride means our own dear town to us, and our pride it forever will be. Grey city, stubbornly implanted, taken so for granted for a thousand years. Stay city, smokily enchanted, cradle of our memories, our hopes and fears. Every blitz your resistance toughening, from the writ to the anchor and crown. Nothing ever could override the pride of London town.
From Leicester Square in London, England, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole, Jr. We got so much news, we can't even let the guys play. From Ad Age, London is ready. Marketers have spent years planning for the event and are hoping to maximize their brand's impact during the Games, doing their best to engage sports fans by harnessing the goodwill, passion, fun, triumph, and drama. The presence of Olympics around town has been relatively restrained so far, with the organizing committee fiercely guarding sponsor privileges. It's very different from the Queen's Diamond Jubilee in June, when the whole city was awash with Union Jacks and royal memorabilia. Instead, the Olympic brand is most obviously present in the transport network, where bright pink London 2012 signage dominates. Coca-Cola, Samsung, and Lloyds Bank were the presenting partners for the torch relay when the procession came through Stoke, Newington, and Hackney, the London borough that's home to the Olympic Park. The crowd's cheers were reserved for the torchbearers, for an imposter riding a bike carrying a "Down with Barclays Bank" slogan, and even the police, while Coca-Cola and Samsung buses were greeted with silence and the Lloyds bus was booed. Coca-Cola has choreographed surprise dance performances and set up a series of makeovers for its iconic Piccadilly Circus neon sign. McDonald's, the official restaurant of the Olympics, is sending out crews to film fans, as well as asking them to upload their own video onto Facebook. See, Rupert, they're working for free, too. The City of London, one of the biggest brands on show during the Games, is gearing up to showcase itself. InnoVision, an independent agency specializing in large-scale live events, is dressing landmarks to impress the visitors. Working with Mayor Boris Johnson, the British Ray Nagin, InnoVision is lighting up the Houses of Parliament for the first time, projecting Olympic-themed movies onto the Houses of Parliament for 3 hours every night. London ad agencies are also getting into the Olympic spirit. McCann World Group, which is the agency of the organizing committee, has installed a mechanical gerbil in its office window. The mechanical gerbil answers questions about the Games. Despite tickets for the events being sold out, television images have revealed scores of empty seats at the swimming, dressage, volleyball, and tennis. Commentators noted the unfilled seats, and members of the public who were unable to purchase tickets took to Twitter to express their anger. A spokesperson for LOCOG said, "We are aware that some venues have empty seats. We believe they are in accredited seating areas, and we're in the process of finding out who should have been in the seats and why they weren't there." This comes after LOCOG faced criticism for the number of seats given to members of the Olympic family. Well, it's like members of the family not to show up, isn't it? In response, now, soldiers have been drafted to fill the empty seats. Yes, the Olympics are like the Oscars. They need seat fillers. Troops were dispatched to the North Greenwich Arena, normally called the O2 Arena, except O2, a telephone company, didn't pay up for Olympic privileges to have their brand name mentioned, even though they sponsored the arena, by the London Organizing Committee to take up the seats. Troops to take up the seats left empty by accredited officials from Olympic and Sporting Federation, as well as some sponsors. More troops, many of whom had their leave canceled to provide emergency security after the organizers failed to find enough security guards, will be issued with last-minute invites to take seats in venues when blocks of seats are found to be empty. The Culture Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, says the empty seats were very disappointing. He says the matter is being looked at very urgently. The biggest overseas ticketing agency for the Olympics has been besieged by complaints after hundreds of buyers were forced to wait in lines for more than 6 hours on Monday, and others received groups of tickets that were not seated together. Coastsport, the official overseas ticketing partner for the U.S., Australia, and Canada, I guess they speak English, was the subject of complaints in America last week after it told hundreds of purchasers to collect their tickets from a box office in London. Some visitors, as the temperatures reached the high 80s last week in London, some visitors had to leave without collecting the tickets, while others found they had bought a group of tickets that were scattered around huge venues. An investigation is underway in the Olympic team of India after an imposter slipped into the opening ceremony and hogged the limelight from the real athletes. The unidentified young woman wearing turquoise trousers and a red hoodie led the team in the stadium despite having nothing to do with the squad, all of whom were wearing yellow turbans or saris. India's chief of mission has demanded an explanation from organizers. She had no business to walk in with the Indian contingent, and we are taking up the issue with the organizers. We don't know who she is and why she was allowed to walk in. It is a shame she was with the athletes in the march. The Indian contingent was shown for hardly 10 seconds on the TV coverage, and the entire focus, sadly, was on this lady instead of the athletes. "We have taken strong exception to this," said the India chef de mission, P.K. Muradilaran Raja. The North Korean women's team went into seclusion at a Glasgow hotel after receiving the profuse apologies and explanations for the flag flap that insulted them and had them considering whether to withdraw from the Olympic football tournament. The team initially refused to take the field on Wednesday night after the South Korean flag was displayed on stadium screens when the North Korean players were being introduced before a match against Colombia. And finally, an Egyptian athlete has claimed she had to buy her own Olympic outfit after her National Olympic Committee handed out fake Nike gear to participants. It is understood that the Olympic Committee of Egypt chose a vendor for its athletes training in village wear who supplied counterfeit clothing bearing the Nike brand. Yoma Kailaf, a member of Egypt's synchronized swimming team, confirmed on Twitter that the athletes were given fake Nike wear. This just in from a synchronized swimmer. When asked by another user if the news was true, she wrote, "Yes, it is." The bags, for example, had big Nike logo in the front, and the zippers are Adidas. She added, "It's so frustrating we had to pay extra £2,000 to have other proper stuff to wear so we can look okay, not even good." When you've ticked off a synchronized swimmer, ladies and gentlemen, you've gone too far. They're trained to be cheerful. News of the Olympic movement. the Olympics. It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day. Frankly, if I were in the Army, you know, and the choice is you can go to Afghanistan or you can go see the Olympics, I know what my choice would be. Ladies and gentlemen, more about LIBOR, that scandal that is kind of sneaking off the front pages, but is going to be sneaking back. Barclays Bank wants all its employees to learn that they never, ever should try to rig LIBOR again. So the top executive at Barclays Bank is appearing in a 12-minute video about the bank having learned lessons from the LIBOR scandal. And all Barclays employees are expected to watch the video. That sounds like fun. It begins with Rich Ritchie, real name, the chief of Barclays' investment banking arm, explaining that because the topic of LIBOR is so complex, he's going to read from a teleprompter. He states he wants to make sure he gets it right in the interests of transparency, said one Barclays employee while watching the video. This is just silly. Good Lord, said another. This is just to provide cover so that Ritchie can tell the regulators that he made us all watch this film. And they can. New details from court documents and sources close to the scandal investigation suggest that groups of traders working at three major European banks were heavily involved in rigging those global benchmark interest rates. Some of those traders, including one who used to work at Barclays in New York, still have senior positions at Wall Street trading desks. Because, you know, accountability consists of saying, that's all right, keep doing it. Until now, most of the tension has involved Barclays, which last month reached a $500 million settlement with U.S. and U.K. authorities for its role in rate manipulation. Now it's becoming clear traders from at least two other banks, Royal Bank of Scotland and Switzerland's UBS, also played a central role. Among them, the three banks employed more than a dozen traders who sought to influence the rates. The rates on which interest rates for so much stuff, including home mortgages, car loans, and credit cards, are based. Yes, indeed. It's become a time bomb, says Reuters news service, for regulators and politicians on both sides of the Atlantic. The rates determine the cost of trillions of dollars of borrowings. And, according to the Business Daily Handelsblatt, you get that, don't you? The kid threw mine in the sprinkler today. Europe's biggest bank is expecting a huge fine over its involvement in the LIBOR scandal. And first arrests, hello, appear to be imminent. Deutsche Bank's management and supervisory board are discussing setting aside between $300 million and $1 billion, according to Handelsblatt, projected for a heavy fine for the manipulations of the interest rate. Europe's biggest bank could face a fine of maybe even a little more than $1 billion, according to Morgan Stanley. You know Morgan. So nice. He got a first name twice. BaFin, the German financial regulator, has launched a special investigation into Deutsche Bank, the only bank in Germany so far incriminated in the scandal. But the chief of the regulator urged banks involved in the scandal to make provisions for anticipated losses. She said the magnitude of the manipulations has rendered her, quote, speechless, unquote. Regulator rendered speechless, ladies and gentlemen. But issuing a statement saying, clearly not rendered speechless because she issued a statement. You see the irony there? I think you do. LIBOR. Keep an eye on it. More lie than bore. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Nothing more about the Olympics for the entire broadcast. How about that? The Chicago Tribune has issued an apology for the Broomhilda comic strip that ran in Wednesday's edition, saying it was a mistake to run the cartoon in which two characters banter about being noisy at the movies when one delivers a punchline about gunfire. That is funny. Microsoft, Windows, Azure, and Google Talk representatives have apologized to their customers for outages that cut services on Tuesday. Microsoft posted several status reports on its Azure service dashboard while attempts were made to resolve the problem. Then the company issued an apology saying the incident was caused by a misconfigured network device. It's nice and clear. Google Talk service dashboard kept customers updated on the outage of Google Talk. Please rest assured, the system reliability is a top priority at Google, said Google's apology. Roseanne Barr issued a mea culpa this week after tweeting an angry message in response to Chick-fil-A's stance against gay marriage. Anyone who eats Chick-fil-A, and she doesn't use the word chick, uses a word that sounds much like it, but ends in a T, stance against gay marriage, deserves to get the cancer that is sure to come from eating antibiotic-filled tortured chickens, the comedian wrote on her Twitter feed. The comment drew the ire of some of Barr's followers and prompted her to apologize in a series of tweets for the harsh language. I shouldn't have used the word deserves in my tweet, and I apologize. No one deserves cancer at all. I'm not that type of person who blames victims. Unquote. Apparently, she blamed the chickens. A Dubai franchise of the well-known Time Out magazine, whose publications offer up-to-date information on nightlife, concerts, and discounts, has apologized after publishing a bar guide in Dubai during Ramadan. Time Out Dubai responded to Muslims fasting by posting an apology on its Twitter account. According to the national newspaper, we would like to apologize for any offense caused by our recent article on the subject of nightlife during Ramadan. The article was removed once Twitter users with the hashtag #StopTimeOutDubai expressed their fury. Ooh, you don't want to incite fury in Dubai, do you? The head of United Continental Holdings, you know, the airline that used to be United and Continental, has apologized for the operational problems that have dogged the airline in recent months and left its performance sagging. The transition that created the world's largest airline has triggered a succession of teething problems, according to NASDAQ.com. As executives sought to combine computer and reservation systems, revamp the frequent flyer program, and deliver promised synergies. Where are those synergies? Our operational performance didn't meet our goals, said United Chief Executive Jeff Smizak, the guy who insists on being in the safety videos at the beginning of every United flight. I know we caused some customer disservice, and I apologize for that. Twitter, in this wave of internet-related apologies, has also apologized for a worldwide outage this week that left the site inaccessible for more than an hour. It blamed the outage on a technical fault and said it wasn't related to traffic caused by the London Olympics. So, is it too early to blame the Iranians? Google, Microsoft, and Twitter all down? I know. It's just idle speculation, and I'm just the idol to do it. Little Steven Van Zandt has apologized for messages he posted to a Twitter account after Bruce Springsteen performed in London's Hyde Park when his band and guest star Paul McCartney were halted due to a curfew. Paul can't get a break this summer, can he? At that time, Van Zandt wrote, "We break curfews in every country, but only English cops needs," that's what he says, "to punish us by not letting us leave until the entire crowd goes." He added, "But seriously, when did England become a police state?" Now, at the Huffington Post, Van Zandt apologizes, writing he was sorry for blaming the London police for halting the performance and that his remarks were interpreted as a criticism of the London police. Barclays has apologized for its role in the LIBOR scandal. Thank you for that. South Korean President Lee Myung-bak apologized for unfortunate incidents surrounding his family as prosecutors prepare to indict his brother on corruption charges. Who does he think he is? President of Afghanistan? Roberto Hernandez, right-hander on the Cleveland Indians, formerly known as Fausto Carmona, was contrite and remorseful as he confessed to the entire organization that he pretended to be somebody he was not for the past 12 years. "I want to say I'm sorry," he said through an interpreter. "I thank God I'm here. But who am I?" And why am I in Cleveland? The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
want that love. Understand the meaning of our life lived unto its potential.
London, England, England, where there's never any rain. This is Le Show. Ladies and gentlemen, now news of AFAC. Guo Boxiong, Vice Chairman of China's Central Military Commission, has called for enhanced military ties between China and Afghanistan while meeting with visiting Afghan Defense Minister Abdul Rahim Wardak. Both countries have seen significant results in cooperation in recent years, Guo said, noting that bilateral military relations between Afghanistan and China have been boosted steadily. Did you know this? Guo praised Afghanistan for its support for China on issues related to China's core interests, adding China had consistently supported and actively participated in Afghanistan's reconstruction. Who knew? I thought we were doing that. China called on the international community to respect the Afghan people's will. Will continue to provide support and assistance for the country. This is from a Chinese news service. That's why it sounds like that. He called on the two militaries to further enhance strategic communication and strengthen pragmatic cooperation. Wardak expressed gratitude for the help China has extended to his country. Yeah, China. Your point? And congressional investigators and observers in the U.S. military alleged that injured Afghan soldiers at Dawood National Military Hospital routinely died of simple infections and were allegedly even starved to death as Afghan doctors and nurses demanded bribes for food and basic care. The inspector general, I guess, of the war, is looking into whether some military officials took steps to cover up investigations into what were described as Auschwitz-like conditions at the hospital. At least $180 million was spent by the U.S. government on the hospital over 9 years. Officials began documenting rampant corruption at the hospital as far back as 2006, including stolen pharmaceuticals and counterfeit medicine being used on Afghan soldiers. You are so welcome. By 2010, military officials on site began documenting maggots on open wounds, patients starved for weeks, surgery performed with no sedatives, and bed sores so deep that bones showed through. Investigators have been told by whistleblowers that higher-ups, including Lieutenant General William Caldwell, took steps to delay investigations into the hospital in 2010 because it might prove politically embarrassing. That sounds bad, but I think some folks you and I know are going to be taking phone calls on this issue next. So stay tuned.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where a Hindu Kush home companion returns next week.
From the newly unfurbished presidential palace in downtown Kabul, where everything is either headed for Dubai or marked down for quick sale, I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Pick and Pack, the Triptych Brothers. Welcome to another edition of Karzai Talk. Our show comes to you today with the help of the Chinese People's Liberation Army. We travel on your stomach.
What a triumphant week, my younger brother.
You mean 6 days in Kabul without anything blowing up?
That was good. How did we do that?
From what I heard, Taliban took the week off for desensitivity training.
What? They just sit around and apply numbing spray to the affected area?
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not much like that, but...
But the real triumph this week was that we got the Afghan National Olympic team safely to the Olympics.
And with the right uniforms. Mm-hmm. I did hear, my older brother, you tried to equip them with counterfeit Nike gear.
Oh, it was bound to happen. Might as well keep it in the family. Besides, it was actually pretty good stuff. It was made of some miracle fiber.
Yes. It's a miracle it hung together. But the Olympic authorities confiscated all those uniforms, right?
Well, they had a little help from the Nike people. Mm. They said we had the swoosh upside down, and we said,
You're holding the uniforms upside down.
Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, I'm Bill, long-time general. First-time caller.
Bill, from your accent, I'm surmising that you're an American.
Either that or you've been chewing way too much gum.
Guilty as charged, sir, at least as far as being an American is concerned. As for other charges that may or may not be resultful from any kind of probe or inquiry, let me just say that running a provincial hospital in Afghanistan is a long way from Grey's Anatomy.
You mean the television show?
No, sir, the book. We had a lot of doctors there who just never read it.
Well, I think that's because when the Taliban run the medical schools, they thought the illustrations were obscene. But, General, if I understand correctly,
yes, sir.
You didn't want an investigation into what were described as Auschwitz-like conditions at your hospital?
Auschwitz-like? Mm-hmm. I've seen bad reviews on Angie's List, but that's ridiculous.
Well, sir, this is how these things get blown up out of proportion to themselves or to others. Mm. I think we were accused of being Auschwitz-light. That's a very different concept. We did have very bad food and showers that gave off a persistent odor of natural gas, but that was all for a good reason.
Well, I'm going to guess money, but just because I'm related to this guy.
No, sir, actually. It was just that patients did tend to stay on at the hospital after they'd been treated. Those features were just our particular method of encouraging them to return to their homes.
Oh, and did it work?
In some cases, yes, sir. But for many of them, home meant really very bad food and not even the aroma of a heating fuel.
Well, General, you know we can't help with everything here at Karzai Talk.
That's right. We only control things within 20 kilometers of our studio.
And then only when we're awake.
I appreciate that, gentlemen. Perhaps more than you do.
But although we don't encourage repeat callers, we'll be happy to talk to you again. Thanks for the call.
Hello, you are in Karzai Talk.
Hello, this is Comrade Lee. Long-time manager of show for People's Marathon Cooperative. First-time acknowledged caller.
Oh, Mr. Lee, thanks for the call. What can we two modest brothers in the workshop of developing broadcasting do for you?
Well, of course, in my country, we don't yet enjoy the freedom of having happy Goraki authority figures joke haplessly while raising large sums for their continued employment.
Well, listen, my friend, this is a whole new world. Before we got into public radio, I thought owning a Toyota dealership and looting a bank were the only sure ways to have a good life for my wife and children and other wife.
Understood. But if my country is to have an ongoing and developing military relationship with your country...
And look, nothing would make me happier unless it was our Olympic team getting comped on their meals.
I'm just hoping that in the future, in that relationship, mm-hmm. you just might consider such enhancements as doing your show on tape delay and editing your calls for acceptability.
Oh, look, we are following the American model right now, Mr. Lee.
Yes, well, that's what I am concerned about.
I wouldn't be concerned. We pre-record all our phone conversations, and we rerun the best of them 2 years later.
Oh.
It only sounds live, because we have no idea what we're doing. That's what creates our relatability.
Well, in that case, I think we can continue to increase our support. Should we send missiles and tanks?
At this point, I'd say just underwrite our show. We know what to do from there.
All right.
And good luck in the Olympics.
Thank you, but our 5-year plan does not rely on luck.
Neither does ours. So far, that's been our big mistake. Thanks for the call. We had help today from the Olympic Broadcasting Authority, supporting amateurism in the radio.
Legal advice for Cars I Talk comes from the firm of Ketchum & Newcomb. I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. Join us next time for another edition of Cars I Talk. This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
Blue smoke rings like a universe. What a way to wind up with your memories lined up, walking through the downstairs door. All your insides hurting, 'cause you know for certain.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. Won't you? Yes, I guess you will. The organization owned by Rupert Murdoch that owns his British newspapers, News International, has undergone a change in the, quote, culture and practice, unquote, within its empire, according to the Deputy Commissioner of Scotland Yard, Sue Akers. She's leading a probe into alleged illegal activities by journalists across all British media. The activities include phone hacking, computer hacking, and bribery of public officials, don't you know? She says the Internal Management and Standards Committee of News Corp has contributed significant evidence that has led to very substantial arrests in the investigation. 74 people have been arrested, including Rebecca Brooks, former head of News International and the apple of Rupert's eye at one point, who's facing charges of conspiring to pervert the cause of justice.
You can pervert that.
She's on bail. In February, Akers told an official inquiry there appeared to be a culture of illegal payments at the newspaper The Sun, which has been closed. So I guess that's how the culture changed. They closed the newspaper. The phone hacking investigation has broadened to include allegations that information was obtained from stolen cell phones, according to Akers as well. So keep your hands on your cell phone when you're around people from Rupert Murdoch's newspaper. As you probably already know by now, Rupert has resigned as a director of a string of companies behind his British newspapers. Officials of the company say it's just housekeeping. And major shareholders have renewed their push for Murdoch to resign as chairman at the company's upcoming annual meeting. 18 major shareholders, including Connecticut's State Pension Fund, they have one? And Britain's Legal and General, I guess that's a big company over here, have signed a letter calling for Murdoch to step down from the company he has spent 60 years messing around with. News Corp, you know, has been in the news, blah, blah, blah. We believe it is important for News Corporation to uphold the highest standards of corporate governance, says the letter. That would be nice. And in order to protect the value of our investment. All right. The campaign has been organized by Christian Brothers Investment Services and members of the Local Authority Pension Fund Forum. They organized a similar protest last year at the general meeting, stockholders meeting. Murdoch received the support of 86% of the shareholders at the time. So he's probably going to win. That would be the way to bet, and that, you know, would be nice. News of Nice Corp, ladies and gentlemen. And now, let's hear about the Atom, our friend, the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, safe, too cheap to meet. Clean, safe, too safe to meet. Save, safe, too safe to meet.
Addie the Atom, you are in the Olympic spirit.
I know. My nucleus is pink.
It is. An investigation into how elevated levels of tritium, our old friend tritium, got into an on-site industrial well water continues at Three Mile Island, our old friend Three Mile Island. Plant officials say tritium is a weak form of radiation.
Not that weak.
There's no cause for residential alarm. All affected bodies of water are contained on the site and pose no health or safety risks, according to officials who are working to find the source of the leak.
You can always believe officials.
All right. You heard it straight from the Adam's mouth. About 2,700 gallons of water from the spent fuel pool at Vermont Yankee power plant drained into a wastewater system last week. The pool contains 2,500 spent fuel rods removed from the reactor core. They're submerged below more than 20 feet of water. The water drained about 6 inches over the course of half an hour. Employees who were working on the fuel pool cleanup system left the drain valves open.
That can happen to anybody.
All right. Operators in the control room discovered the problem after an alarm went off. That's a good way to discover it. The radioactive water did drain into a wastewater collection tank. Employees did not follow proper procedures, according to Rob Williams, spokesman for the plant. Entergy Corporation, which owns the plant, will be reviewing maintenance protocols. Vermont Yankee did not send out a press release about the incident because the spokesperson for the plant said notifying the public was not necessary since safety wasn't an issue.
What you don't know.
A government-appointed inquiry in Japan has delivered a damning assessment of Japanese nuclear regulators and the operator of the Fukushima plant, raising further fears that despite new rules, the country's nuclear sector still does not meet safety requirements. The panel suggested post-Fukushima safety steps taken at nuclear power plants across the country have not been enough to cope with a complex catastrophe, a combination of human error and natural causes. Both the government and company should establish a new philosophy of disaster prevention that requires measures against any accident and disaster, regardless of event probability, they said. Électricité de France and Areva France, along with other French nuclear operators, may not be setting aside enough funds to pay for future dismantling of reactors and treatment and storage of atomic waste, according to a parliamentary report. Who is? Federal inspectors found months-old safety problems that could lead to extra inspections at the Catawba nuclear plant in North Carolina. It lost power from off-site sources in April. Yes, it lost power coming into the plant on April 4th. Backup generators kicked in and the one operating reactor shut down safely. Officials declared an unusual event. Something that happens when a power plant loses power. I know. Lovers of irony are loving it. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued a report this week stating that the generators at San Onofre, south of Los Angeles, north of San Diego, were not properly designed to resist internal vibrations. Neither am I. And that changes will have to be made. The question now is, who will pay for the changes? Any guesses? Put your hands down. More than 40 workers at a nuclear power station in northern India have been exposed to our old friend tritium in two separate leaks in the past 5 weeks, says a director of the unit where the leak happened. Quote, such minor leakages keep on happening, but they cause no harm, unquote.
It's a nice statement. It's pithy.
It is indeed. And lovers of irony, attention. Nuclear power production in the U.S. is at the lowest seasonal levels in 9 years as drought and heat force reactors from Ohio to Vermont to slow output because the water in the rivers running by them is too warm to act as coolant, and the drought is lowering the flow of the rivers. Summertime, when you'd need electricity, the nuclear power plants dependent on water for coolant are reducing their output. Clean, safe, too cheap to meter, too funny to consider. Our friend the Atom. Addie, what are you going to go see?
Rowing.
Good choice. News of the Atom, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of the broadcast. Why rowing?
Tickets were cheap.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, available as a free podcast through kcrw.com. And it'll be just like being in the Army and going to the Olympics, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Hawaii, and Chicago desks. Thanks to Adrian Bodnam here at Global Radio in London for helping to make today's program all that it could be. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the 65,000-plus followers at The Harry Shearer, unless the Twitter breaks down. See you at the mall. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the Rubber Promise and the home of the homeless. So long from London, England.